Hello, everybody. This is Daniel Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Informant. This is News for the Soul.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you're listening. I'm Nicole Whitney, and you found it, News for the Soul. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And we're here. So good to be here, and so good to be talking to all of you. We'll be back in a moment with our interview.
Did you know that News for the Soul is home to the largest totally free life-changing audio resource on the World Wide Web? And did you know that journalist and single mom Nicole Whitney is single-handedly making this freely available for you to hear? That's why your support is critical to help keep News for the Soul totally free. You can help in several ways. Firstly, you can tell everyone you know about News for the Soul. So many people out there still do not know about this totally free life-changing resource. So do us, yourself, and your friends a favor and pass it on today. Secondly, financial support for News for the Soul helps keep the show going. Whether it's through advertising, donations, or purchases of our exclusive audio and video packages, like the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, which will teach you how to bend metal with your mind for real. This support helps keep us on the air. Go to newsforthesoul.com now to find out more. We invite you to help us help the world. And thanks for tuning in. It's listeners like you who have made News for the Soul the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL. Together, we are already making a difference in our world. So thank you for listening, and thanks in advance for your support. Now, let's get back to the show.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to News for the Soul. I'm Nicole Whitney, your host for the hour. This is life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Got it going on again. Robert Schwartz is here. He's the author of a new book called Courageous Souls. Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? I've heard we allegedly do. We're going to dive into that subject deeper. And, oh, I see our dear friend Daniel Brinkley has given a quote about the book. Let's see what Daniel had to say. The more we know about the meaning of life, the better we understand the important choices we must make. Robert Schwartz has done an excellent job of presenting the possible explanations of what we are doing here and why we are here. I highly recommend the book, Daniel Brinkley. Welcome to News for the Soul, Robert Schwartz.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you here, and pleasure to find out about your book. Actually, our cameraman at Life Changing TV, Peter Williams, was reading it, and he phoned me up one day and said, "My God, get him on." So I immediately looked you up on the web, and here we are. So when did you have kind of an interesting story, I understand, it happened about 2003, where you connected with this information?
That's correct. In 2003, I was living in Chicago and was working as a self-employed marketing and communications consultant and feeling deeply unfulfilled by the work that I was doing. You know, I often had the feeling that if I were to fall off the face of the earth, none of my clients would even notice. They would just plug somebody else into my role and carry right on. And I knew that there had to be a deeper calling or a higher purpose for my life, but I didn't know what it was. And so in that search for greater meaning, I did something that for me at that time was quite unusual, and that is I had a session with a psychic medium. And in this session, the medium introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, that is, highly evolved, non-physical consciousnesses with whom we plan our lives and who then guide us through those lives after we incarnate. And through the medium, I was able to speak with my spirit guides. One of the things they said to me during that session, they said, "You planned many of your greatest challenges before you were born." And as you can imagine, I said, "Well, why in the world did I do that?" And they said, "You did this for reasons of spiritual growth." So it introduced me to a concept that I knew could bring great healing and hope and greater meaning to people's lives. And after that session, I decided I would write a book about it.
And here it is. Now, how long was it in the making?
It took about 3 years to do the research and the writing. The process was one in which I collaborated with four mediums and channels, people who, in my opinion, are among the most gifted mediums and channels in the country. And these individuals had the exact collection of skills that I needed in order to do this kind of research. For example, one of the mediums I worked with is a woman in Arizona named Stacy Wells. Stacy has the unique ability to actually see and hear the pre-birth planning sessions we have with each other before we're born. So she could get word for word the conversations that people were having each other when they were planning their lives and when they were agreeing to experience certain challenges. And in the book, I present these conversations verbatim. So we were able to actually peer behind the veil, so to speak, and find out why souls were planning lives the way that they were.
You know, so many of us have had that sense that, you know, that's often been the beginning of many conscious evolutions for individuals is, you know, there's more and having a sense of your infinite nature but not really being able to define it or articulate it. But how did you know, or how do you know, the information that you got? How do you know it's real?
That's a very good question, Nicole. There are a couple ways in which I know that. One is that I've had multiple personal sessions with each of the mediums, and I can tell you from my own experience that they knew many, many things about me that they could not have known if they didn't have true psychic gifts. Another form of confirmation came from the interviewees themselves. After every session, I would speak privately with them and ask them if the information resonated with them. And without exception, they would always say to me that they were extremely impressed at how much the mediums and the channels knew and that they felt the information was quite accurate. So this is not hard science. I would be the first person to say that. I'm not employing the scientific method. I can't actually travel myself to someone's pre-birth planning session and report back to you on what I saw. But I think what I've done here in Courageous Souls is hopefully the next best thing, and that is to use these very gifted mediums and channels to peer behind the veil and find out why we plan lives the way we do.
So walk us through that beginning where you connected with this information and you know, what kind of things were accurate that, you know, and how did that feel? I mean, was this your first experience with that kind of mediumship or whatever?
The session in 2003 was my first experience with a professional medium. One of the things that happened in that session that convinced me that the information was accurate is that my spirit guides referred to a prayer I had said alone and silently to myself in the privacy of my home 5 years earlier. And I had actually forgotten that I had said this prayer, but they reminded me of it. The situation was one in which I was going through a very difficult time in my personal life. And alone in my home, and again silently in my own mind, I prayed to God and I said something along the lines of, God, I can't do this alone. Please send help. They knew about that prayer. They knew exactly what I had said. And they went on to tell me, your prayer was answered, by which they meant that additional non-physical guidance had been sent to me. So as you can imagine, when you're talking to consciousnesses that know everything about you, including things that you've never shared with anyone else, it gives them a lot of credibility. And so when they started to talk to me about pre-birth planning, I was listening in rapt attention, and I was inclined to believe what they were telling me.
Hmm. So, okay, well, let's get into the nitty-gritty of it a bit then. What were you able to find out as far as at what point we plan and how do we go about doing that?
Well, the planning is done by the soul, and it's important to distinguish between soul and personality. You and I and everyone listening at this time are personalities, that is, a portion of a soul's energy in a human body. But the soul is vast. It goes well beyond any one personality, and souls very often will have multiple incarnations going on at the same time. It is possible, actually, for a soul to have more than one incarnation on Earth at the same time, although that would be very unusual. But it's not unusual for a soul to have multiple incarnations on different planets or different sorts of non-physical lifetimes going on all at once. The soul is vast. It operates on many, many dimensions, only one of which is the physical plane. So when souls decide to plan an incarnation, they get together, so to speak, and they decide what they will experience with each other, and this includes the greatest challenges that each of us faces. Now, in my book, Courageous Souls, I tried to make the book as helpful as possible to people, and so I organized it and researched it by type of life challenge. The challenges I cover are physical illness, parenting handicapped children, deafness, blindness, drug addiction, alcoholism, severe accidents, and the death of a loved one. Each one of these challenges I found was planned prior to birth, although for very, very different reasons. And when we went into these pre-birth planning sessions, We heard souls talking about what they hope to learn and how they hope to grow through experiencing these challenges. Another thing I heard in every single pre-birth planning session was souls wanting to be of service to each other. And very often they would agree to play quote-unquote negative roles to challenge each other and stimulate each other's personal growth. Now, many of your listeners will be familiar with the concept of oneness. That is, there's really only one being in the universe, and it's you and me and everyone listening now and everybody who's out there. We're all really just one being, and each person is an individualized expression of the one. I think that oneness explains this sort of altruistic orientation that I saw in the pre-birth planning sessions, because if you know that I am you, quite literally, why would you not want to be of service to me? And conversely, if I know that you are me, again, quite literally, why would I not want to be of service to you? So I saw this kind of service orientation running as a theme throughout each and every pre-birth planning session, and it's one of the reasons that souls agreed to play challenging roles for each other.
Yes, you talk about quite literally having that knowledge and experience of being one and connected, as opposed to being hypothetical. Like, again, how did we arrive at that through these sessions?
The concept of oneness is something that I've come to understand more through my own reading and study and personal experience. You know, shortly after I had the session with a medium, I had a profound spiritual experience. I was at home working one day and decided to take a break from my work. I went for a walk, was just walking down the sidewalk in a suburb of Chicago, and suddenly I was overcome with this powerful, powerful feeling of unconditional love for every person I saw. And I remember this very clearly because the first person I saw was a cab driver sitting behind the wheel of his cab waiting for a fare, and I felt this incredible unconditional love for him. And then I looked and I saw a barber shop on the corner, and I saw the barber behind the window cutting someone's hair, and I felt the same great unconditional love for him. And then I saw a young mother pushing a baby in a stroller down the sidewalk, and I felt the same unconditional love for her. And I felt this incredible, overwhelming love for each and every person I saw. And even though I had never had an experience like this before or even heard of anything like it, I knew intuitively what was happening, and that was that I was in some form of enhanced, immediate communion with my own soul. It's as though my soul were saying to me, this love is who you really are. And I think that this feeling of overwhelming unconditional love is also a feeling of oneness, because when I was looking at each of these people and feeling this love for them, it's almost as though I was one with them and they were one with me. Now, I believe that the reason my soul gifted me with this experience is that my soul knew that I would discover this theme of unconditional love in the research I was about to do. In each and every pre-birth planning session, I heard souls expressing unconditional love for each other. Now, if I had not had this experience on that day, walking down the sidewalk, I would have seen this theme again and again and again, but always in the back of my mind there would have been a little voice saying, how do you know that this is real? How do you know that souls are really unconditionally loving? You're just getting these secondhand reports from a medium. But I do know, because I had this experience myself, and that's why I can say to you, Nicole, and to your listeners with complete confidence and certainty that the soul is unconditional love. And I don't mean simply that souls are loving, although I believe that to be true, certainly. I mean that we are quite literally made from the energy of love. And this is what I saw again and again in these pre-birth planning sessions. Souls challenging themselves, challenging each other, but always the life plan, the life blueprint, was based on unconditional love for self and for others. And I know it to be so because I experienced it myself that day walking down the sidewalk.
So, if we're love, and that's our total true essence, why do we need all these challenges?
That's a great question. What I found in my research for courageous souls is that because the soul is love, and because the soul is in a realm of love, the soul cannot fully know or understand its nature. In other words, as I understand it, the non-physical realm is very much as it is classically portrayed. It's a realm of great peace and joy and love and light. And because the soul is made of love and is surrounded by only love, it experiences no contrast to itself. And because the soul experiences no contrast to self, the soul cannot fully understand what it means to be made from the energy of love. I'll borrow an analogy from a book other than mine to make this a little bit clearer. In one of the Conversation with God books by Neil Donald Walsh, Neil Donald Walsh asks the same question that you just asked, and God replies by using the analogy of the white room. God says to Neil, imagine that you are a white being in a white room. The walls are white, the floor is white, the ceiling is white, everything is white. If you are a white being in such a room, how do you know that you're white? The answer is you don't, and in fact you can't, until you experience something that is other than white. And then, by experiencing the contrast, you come to understand what it means to be a white being. I think the same thing is happening with the soul. The soul is love. It experiences only love in the non-physical realm. And so in order to understand what love really is, we incarnate in this physical plane, in this realm of duality, where we experience things that are not love. And by experiencing something other than love, we come into a remembrance, a true understanding of who we really are.
Well, I guess it would be pretty frigging boring as well. Floating it around in a little white rim of love. It sounds nice, but maybe after a few infinite sessions of that, we'd get a little bored. I don't know. Now, did you have this coming up as well in these pre-birth sessions?
Yes, and I'll give you a specific example. In the chapter on the pre-birth planning of deafness and blindness, I share the story of a young African-American woman named Penelope. Penelope was born completely deaf in both ears, and she planned this experience before she was born. The reason Penelope did this is that in the lifetime immediately prior to this one, she had the same mother that she has in this lifetime. In the past lifetime, when she was a small girl, Penelope heard her mother shot to death by the mother's boyfriend. She didn't actually see the murder, but she was within hearing range, and she heard the gunshots that killed her mother in that lifetime. Now, as a small child, she was, of course, quite psychologically traumatized by this, and in fact, it led her to commit suicide later on in that lifetime. When we went into her pre-birth planning session, we heard her conferring with her spirit guide, and he said to her, "My dear, would you prefer to be born deaf so that no similar trauma will happen to you again in this lifetime?" And she said, "Yes, that is what I want and what I wish to do." Now, then something really interesting happens in her pre-birth planning session. The soul of the man who murdered her mother in the previous lifetime is there. And he stands up and he says, "I volunteer not to incarnate while you and your mother plan another incarnation, because I believe that you will be better served by me not being in body when you are in body." And to me, this is really quite a remarkable thing, because we have here a soul who was a murderer in a previous lifetime. This is somebody who we would judge. We would say this is a bad person. This is someone who should be punished. But on the level of the soul, he's just as altruistic, just as unconditionally loving, just as service-oriented as anyone else. And he volunteers to defer his own growth and learning by putting off another incarnation so that Penelope and her mother can have the sort of incarnation they would like to have. So this, I think, is a very good example of the sort of service orientation and the sort of unconditional love that I saw souls expressing for each other again and again and again. And it isn't just the souls who had lifetimes of being loving individuals in the past. It was every soul, including the soul of the murderer, who was just as loving as anyone else.
Now, are you saying that we plan everything? Like, is there no free will once we're here?
No, in fact, exactly the opposite is true. We have complete free will at every moment. At every moment, we can deviate from the pre-birth plan as much or as little as we would like to. The incarnate personality always has that option. Now, what tends to happen, though, is that you and I and everyone listening, we're actually best served by more or less adhering to the pre-birth plan, particularly if we've planned certain major lessons and major challenges for ourselves. It's actually in our best interest to have those experiences, even though they're painful, because they produce the sort of growth and learning that we're looking for. So what will happen is that if you choose to deviate from an important aspect of your pre-birth plan, your soul and your spirit guides will work overtime, so to speak, to bring the experience back around to you. And this is why many times people comment that they notice after a certain age, they start to notice a recurring theme in their life. A certain type of challenge seems to come back again and again and again. That can be happening for two reasons. One is that they may have sidestepped it earlier on, and their soul and their guides are bringing it back to them so that they can have that experience. Or they had the experience, but they didn't learn what they were supposed to learn, and so now it's coming back, usually in a more intense form, because their soul is trying to get their conscious attention. The soul is saying, this is something that I planned for you before you incarnated. You agreed to the plan, and I'm bringing it back around to you now in a more intense form because I'm trying to get your conscious attention to learn certain things. And that's generally the way the life plan plays out.
So there is a purpose of growth and learning as well.
Yes, very much so. This learning that occurs here on the physical plane, although it often comes through pain and suffering, is eternal. It becomes part of the soul literally for all eternity. The suffering that is part of the learning process is very transient. It's very evanescent. You know, from the soul's perspective, a lifetime is as brief as a clap of thunder. It's here, and then it's over. But again, the learning that results becomes part of the soul literally for all eternity, and the soul evolves to a higher vibration. So from the human perspective, it's very difficult to understand why anyone would plan any sort of quote-unquote bad event for their life. But from the soul-level perspective, it's quite understandable because the suffering doesn't permanently harm anyone. It's here and then it's over quite quickly, and yet the learning is part of the soul for all eternity.
So if we're also learning and evolving towards something, what are we working towards, and what's the point of it?
Well, much of the literature indicates that we're evolving back into a merger with God. In other words, we were created by God with the out-breath, so to speak, the out-breath of God that created us, and we were sent out into the universe to learn and experience and grow, and then we evolve back into what some people term the Godhead. So we merge back with God. Now, that kind of description is a little bit misleading because, in fact, we're actually never really separate from God. We feel that we're separate here because the average person can't perceive God directly. Most people don't have that ability. But, in fact, the higher dimensions, what you might call heaven, overlap the lower dimensions, what we call earth. And so, although we don't perceive God directly, although we don't perceive heaven directly, it's here. There's a channeling in my book, Courageous Souls, in which I ask this question of an angel, and the angel says something like, we are a hair's breadth away from you. And that, I think, is a very good description, getting at the idea that the non-physical realms overlap the physical realms. So we're learning, we're evolving, we're merging our consciousness back into God. It appears that we're physically separate, but in fact that's not true. That's just the way the human mind and the five senses are set up to perceive things.
So in your research for this book, Courageous Souls, what was the most shocking thing you uncovered?
I think a thing that shocked me is one of the stories that I present in the chapter on severe accidents. I tell the story of a woman, Christina, who is now in her 50s. When she was in her 20s, she was working as an administrative assistant at a college in Southern California. And one day she went down to the mailboxes in the basement of the administration building to retrieve her employer's mail. When Christina put her hand into the employer's mailbox, there was a pipe bomb there, and the pipe bomb detonated. There was a huge explosion. It threw her back 10 feet against a concrete wall. 6-foot splinters of wood were shot into the wall like arrows from a bow. The flames from the explosion scorched her entire body very badly. She lost 2 fingers, both eardrums were ruptured, and in the next couple of years she needed 10 different surgeries in order to correct all the damage. When we went into Christina's pre-birth planning session, we actually heard her talking to the soul of the bomber, and they were planning this experience together. Christina volunteered to be at the effects of the bomb for reasons of her own, for her own personal growth. Now, why did she do this? Well, Christina wanted to have an incarnation in which she would be a gifted healer. She wanted to serve others on a large scale through healing. And she knew before she was born that if she could heal herself from the effects of the bomb explosion, she would then be able to take all that wisdom and knowledge about healing and turn it outward in service to humanity. And in fact, that's exactly what Christina went on to do. After she recovered from the surgeries, she went on to acquire a PhD in speech-language pathology. She opened up a private practice, and now some decades later, she has healed thousands and thousands of people. And in fact, she has a unique healing gift, which is that she can go into a patient's brain energetically, that is, non-invasively, and actually restore language processing capabilities to people who have been in severe accidents or who have had strokes. So she is an extraordinarily gifted healer, and the reason she has these gifts is because she learned how to heal herself after that bomb explosion.
So tell me, how exactly does one of these pre-birth sessions work?
What we do to get to a pre-birth session is we work with Stacy Wells' spirit guide, and we start by posing the same question that is posed in every session, and that is, did this person plan this particular challenge before he or she was born, and if so, why? And then the spirit guide takes us from a general view at 10,000 feet level, down and down and down to more and more specific information until we actually get to the conversation itself. Now, when we get to the conversation where the souls are planning the lifetime, what Stacy generally sees is a room and sort of an ante-room attached to it. In the main room, she sees members of a soul group, that is, a collection of souls who are at the same stage of evolution and who repeatedly plan incarnations with each other again and again and again. In the ante-room, she generally sees the spirit guides who work with those souls. They tend to stay there and let the souls plan the lives on their own, but they come forward to offer advice when called upon. She also sees something which is presented in her mind as like a flow chart. A flow chart is a series of if-then scenarios. If you do A, then X will happen. If you do B, then Y will happen. She sees the souls planning lives like a flow chart because they're planning what will happen at the different intersections, the different decision points, key points in the person's life. If the person does this, then this will happen. If they do that, then that will happen. Another thing that we tend to see very often, or that Stacy sees very often, is something that resembles what she describes as a chessboard. It's like a board with a series of black and white squares on it. And this is a tool, a device that the souls are using to plan different stages of the lifetimes. Each block on the chessboard represents a different period of time. And they use this as a device to plan out what will happen during these blocks of time. The planning is very, very specific. It goes down to where somebody will live, who they will meet and become friends with, where they will go to school, the jobs that they will have. It's extremely detailed, and it really goes beyond the comprehension of the human brain. Now, I've said a number of times that we heard the souls talking to each other. It's important to point out that the souls aren't actually sitting around speaking English or any other language to each other. They're communicating telepathically. In other words, the communication is instantaneous, and it's complete, and it's also nonverbal. The translations that are in the book and that Stacy hears are created by her spirit guide. He is taking telepathic thought and translating it into English so that she and I and the future readers of Courageous Souls can hear what the souls were saying to each other. But again, they're not actually speaking English or any other language. The communication is completely telepathic.
Just as you're talking, I have a fun kind of idea pop to mind. I want to see if you'd be open to coming back on the show and bringing Stacy on and having her connect with a couple people here at News for the Soul and doing one of these sessions so that we can have a bit more of a direct experience with it and sort of our listeners through us as well, connecting through it. Would you be open to doing that?
I would be, and I'm quite sure that Stacy would be as well.
I think that sounds like a whole lot of fun. We'll get an even deeper kind of experience of it by participating with you. Now, how many of these sessions in your research did you do for the book?
We did several dozen over the 3-year period.
And were there any dramatic kind of common denominators? I know you've listed sort of a few trends and that kind of thing, but was there anything that stood out as prominently important?
Well, I think we've touched on a couple of the important themes. One is this desire to be of service to other souls. That was a theme that we saw in the pre-birth planning sessions again and again. There was also the theme of unconditional love, souls expressing love for each other and planning lives that were based on love. Another theme that I saw again, which we haven't touched on yet, was that of healing. And by that I mean very often there's some type of energy from a previous incarnation which was left unresolved. And when the soul has the life review, it sees that this energy was left unresolved, and it plans a lifetime of healing. Penelope's story, the young woman who planned deafness, is a good example of that. She had this energy of trauma that was left unresolved after her mother was shot to death in the previous lifetime, and since she committed suicide in that lifetime, she was never able to work through it when she was in body. So when she had her life review and talked with her spirit guide, she saw that this energy of trauma was unresolved, and she planned a subsequent lifetime, the current lifetime, to heal that energy. So this theme of healing is something that we saw again and again. And then I'd say that there is a fourth theme I saw over and over, and that is the balancing of karma from previous lives. Now, karma is often conceptualized as cosmic debt, but I think of it more in terms of unbalanced energy. So to take a very simple example, let's say that two souls had a previous incarnation in which one was physically ill and the other was that person's caretaker. When they leave the body and return to spirit and have their life review, there will be a sense of unbalanced energy in regard to that incarnation, and the two souls will be motivated to balance it. The easiest and most direct way to balance that karma, that energy, would be to reverse roles in the upcoming incarnation. So in other words, the soul who was physically ill now plans to be a caretaker, and the soul who was the caretaker now plans the life challenge of physical illness. Now, what makes this all so interesting and so challenging is that once in body, neither of the two souls is going to remember the pre-birth plan. So the one who is physically ill may feel angry about or burdened by the illness. The one who is the caretaker may feel angry about or burdened by the need to care for another person. And the challenge becomes one of expressing love unconditionally under these very challenging circumstances. When we are able to be unconditionally loving with each other, we come into remembrance of who we are as the soul. I said earlier that the soul is made quite literally from the energy of love. The reason that the soul wants the incarnate personality to remember that is because it gives the soul a deeper self-knowing, a more profound self-knowing. As we express love unconditionally through our life challenges, the soul acquires this more profound understanding of who it is as love. And that really, I think, is the bottom line as to why we're here.
I'm curious as to why we need to heal or balance these things out in body. Like, why can't we just, if we're able to communicate over there and look at these things and understand these things from over there, why do we have to come back here?
I asked that question as well. One of the things I discovered in my research is that there actually is a great deal of healing that occurs over there in spirit. Now, I don't touch on this in my research, but some of your listeners will probably be familiar with the name Michael Newton. Michael Newton is a hypnotherapist who regressed patients to their time in spirit, the time between incarnations. And one of the things those patients told him while they were hypnotized is that they did undergo a great deal of healing while in spirit. And he goes on in his books to describe some of the ways in which that's accomplished. But what I was told when I asked this question is that the energies that are created in the physical realm are most easily and readily healed in the physical realm. So what happens is that after the person passes out of body, these lower energy vibrations stay in the earth plane. They can't go with the spirit back into the higher non-physical vibrations. They stay here, and then when we reincarnate, our DNA actually picks up those energies again, and then we have the opportunity to heal them while in body. I'll give you an example from my book, Courageous Souls, that I think explains this pretty well. In the chapter on the pre-birth planning of drug addiction and alcoholism, I share the story of a gentleman named Pat, who is now in his 70s. Pat was an alcoholic for many decades, and he planned that experience before he was born. There were a number of reasons for this, but one of them was that in a previous lifetime, Pat was a soldier in an army, and he was at war on the battlefield, and everyone else in his troop was killed. He was literally the last man standing, and he was roaming around this battlefield looking at all his fallen comrades, and as you can imagine, he was in a state of extreme fear. He was completely alone. He didn't know if he would die at any moment, and so he was very, very much afraid. Now, as it turns out, he was killed while roaming around this battlefield. And this energy of fear that he was experiencing at the moment of death was left unresolved. Now, the energy of fear is a very, very low vibration energy. It can't be carried with him when he returns to the non-physical realm. So this energy of fear was left here on the earth plane, and when Pat had his life review, he saw that. He saw that he died with this unresolved energy of fear, and he wanted to plan an incarnation in which he would heal that energy. And so he chose the life challenge of alcoholism because he knew that once he was back in body, he would pick up again that energy of fear. The fear would drive him to drink in order to numb the feelings of fear. The drinking would then literally drive him to his knees, where he would call out for God, reestablish his spirituality, and through the reestablishing of his spirituality, heal the fear. So you have him come in complete cycle. You have fear driving him to take actions which then later on heal the fear. And this is the reason that in the commentary on Pat's story, I make the statement, I say, only the courageous plan fear. Because I think that's what Pat did. Pat courageously planned to experience fear in order to heal it. So we might look at Pat's life and look at those decades of alcoholism and tend to be judgmental about it. We might say, Pat retreated into alcohol. Pat used it as a crutch. Pat was not coping well with his life. But in fact, those judgments are far off base because Pat had exactly the experience he planned, and he did it courageously. His alcoholism was intended to heal that energy of fear, and it did.
Doesn't this seem like a lot of work to get these lessons? I mean, God, isn't there an easier way?
Nicole, I think we all wonder that about our lives, and I certainly do too. But again, remember that from the perspective of the soul, a lifetime is very, very brief. In fact, in the non-physical realm, there actually is no linear time. Linear time is something that we experience because we have a left brain that is set up to experience time as a sequence. But the soul doesn't have anything like that. The soul is in a realm in which there is no physical space and there is no linear time. And so all lifetimes from the soul's perspective are occurring concurrently. It's almost as though you had one of those old vinyl records with 8 songs on the side. You had to take the needle from the phonograph and put it on one of the songs in order to hear it. So you could only hear one song at a time. But that doesn't mean that the other songs no longer existed or that they weren't there. They were still there on the album, you just couldn't hear them. But the soul doesn't have that limitation. It's almost as though the soul can hear every song on the record at the same time. And so that's what's happening from the soul's perspective. For us, the suffering seems to go on for a long period of time, and we wonder why in the world did we agree to these plans. But from the soul's perspective, it's very brief, and again, the learning, the growth, is eternal.
Now, it's interesting, because my next question I was going to ask about the time thing, because, I mean, as a remote viewer, we're able to time slide. You know, we can do past time targets as well as future targets. Can you do one of these pre-birth sessions? Well, I guess it would be post-death, really. Can you skip ahead, see what you're planning next time?
You know, I believe that it is possible to do that, but that's not something that I looked at in my research. One of the things I noticed as I was working with the mediums is that when we were presented with past life information for the people that I was interviewing, it was quite literally a past life. It was something that occurred earlier in the Earth's chronology. And so I asked the question, why are we always seeing past lives? If all lives are happening concurrently, why are we not seeing future lives? And the answer I received is that it was likened to the medium looking left instead of right. In other words, the mediums were looking in a certain direction, and so they saw the past lives because that's what they were expecting to see and that's what they were looking for. But with the right training, the medium could turn from left to right and see the future lives as well. That's not something that we attempted to do, but I believe that it is certainly possible.
Well, there you go. There's the sequel to the book, Peeking Ahead. All right. Well, the book is called Courageous Souls. The website is, let me just get it up here, CourageousSouls.com. Of course, Robert Schwartz is the author. All righty. Well, we will link up to it from News for the Soul, and let's do that. Let's get you back on real soon with Stacy and see what we can discover about the News for the Soul contract or whatever it is. Sounds very nice. Well, thank you so much, Robert, for being here today.
Thank you very much, Nicole.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
that unresolved fear in my father had come down to this little boy, who also carried those fears with him. So we're the product of many generations of insecurities and so on.
So you actually, what I hear you say is you actually process through on an emotional issue and...
I'm finished with that particular issue. Yeah, and I went through a myriad of experiences. I mean, in the course of 4 hours, 20, 30, 40 things may come up from your life. You know?
So it's like therapy in a cup.
It's therapy. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty interesting.
It's therapy in a cup.
So what I was trying to understand, though, I mean, it was specific things, about real issues in your life. It wasn't like this abstract acid trip.
Oh, no, no. I mean, for example, I have a friend who injured her hip dancing. And in the ayahuasca journey, these beings came and literally repaired her hip.
Physically?
Physically. Like, she never had the hip problem ever again.
If you consider that there is a possibility that the brain of humans is common knowledge that humans use a very small percentage of their brain.
Some of us smaller than others.
Video from the uplifting to the unexplained, and our next guest, you've heard of him undoubtedly, Conversations with God, author and visionary behind the Humanities Team, Neil Donald Walsh, is here with us talking about the Humanities Team. Let's bring him on. Welcome back to News for the Soul, Neil Donald Walsh.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. It's left open. So you're right. You're profoundly correct. And while this is not an appropriate time to be deeply critical of what's happening down there in the Gulf area, it is an opportunity for us to receive the message that this tragedy has brought to humanity. Life, you know, is a process that brings life messages about life itself. Life informs life about life through the process of life itself.
We had a question from Hank in Texas. He wants to know if we can really, truly, honest to goodness, levitate.
Yeah.
How do we levitate?
By realizing that the air that you perceive is an illusion. It's not air. It can be just as much earth as anything else. In other words, create it for what it is. See it for the solid that you perceive it to be. Change your perception of it. And then simply move up. 19 individuals throughout the planet that are actually, at this moment, levitating.
That means that we can do anything.
Yes. You've walked on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't you walk on air? What's to stop you?
See, it's the mind that's stopping us.
Exactly. Your mind. Start taking over your mind. Start commanding your mind. And you'll find that your existence will change.
So you're saying we can walk on water?
Yes.
How would you summarize the Sark philosophy?
The Sark philosophy is... That's a great question. It's about being who you actually are instead of who you idealize that you would be, or it's about being creatively alive and all that that means, and investigating your dark places. And as I always remind people, you can use a flashlight. And being splendidly imperfect and giving yourself permission to live what I call a juicy life, a succulent wild life.
It was Terrence McKenna who said, to have a great experience with ayahuasca, you have to take a big dose. And I really wanted to have that ultimate death God experience. And you know, again, he didn't speak English, but he did say to the, he turned to the interpreter and said, "Una boca grande," which I knew what he was
grande.
Saying. Yeah, the big glass. There's chanting, he's blessing the ayahuasca, we're putting our intention into it, and we're intense. I'm kneeling in front of this, you know, roughly carved altar, and I see the boca grande, you know. I mean, it is 3 to 4 times the size of what he's given everyone else. I was sweating. I mean, my heart was beating. I was thinking, okay, you know, do I really want to do this? Did you get sick when you took it?
Well, it's interesting. That's what I was saying. It was all about letting go. And when I didn't know I was going to drink until the shaman handed me the cup, and I actually sipped.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to not do something out of fear, and I had so much apprehension coming up. The same thing for me. It has to be really reverent and safe and, you know, ceremonial, and if not, you know. And I couldn't discern if it was the fear voice or not. So once I did sip, I decided, okay, that's it. Nothing's coming out of any orifice whatsoever. So I walked down.
And he said something about he'd been getting sick, you know, every time he'd take it. I mean, and a lot of people do, and the shaman will tell you that's how you purge. You know, that's how you're purging those negative energies out of your body. And so, you know, some people purge out of, you know, without getting too, well, here we go, purge out of both ends simultaneously. I mean, it's not a pretty sight. I had this real thing. I had never once gotten sick. Anytime I'd taken ayahuasca, I just had not gotten sick. And I made that comment to him in the afternoon, and the moment I said it, I thought, you know what? I should have not said this. You know, because I was almost like wearing it like a badge of courage, which that had to go to. So here I am. I drank this big glass, and you know, I knew that within about 45 minutes, it takes a little while to come on, within 45 minutes, under an hour, I'd be jettisoned into this geometric dome. Here I am in this fractal dome, and all of a sudden, my stomach is turning knots. I mean, I'm flashing back and forth between out of body, in body, my stomach's turning knots, and I'm thinking, no, I'm going to control this, just breathe, my body's shaking, I'm trying to ground myself on the ground. I've got my hands, you know, on the jungle floor, laying on this little rice mat, and I am getting sick. His voice said to me, you know what, James, get over yourself and let it go, you know. And I was like, I don't want to get sick. I don't get sick, you know. I don't get sick, you know. I'm James Ray. And you know, get over yourself. You get sick and let it go. I'm like, okay. So I open my eyes, and I have stuck myself way back in the corner in the maloka so I could kind of be in my own energy space. And I tried to sit up. I fell down. I tried to sit up. I fell. I had no motor skills. And I'm like, gosh, you know, not only am I going to have to get sick, but I'm going to have to get carried out into the jungle. You know, I'm going to have to call for help. And you know, I don't want to do that. It was such crap. It really was. And finally, I was just like, you know what? Just get over it and do whatever you need to do and humble yourself and get your butt out there and get sick if that's what you need to do. And if you need to get carried, get carried. The moment I released that, I was able to sit up. I couldn't stand up, but I had to crawl. So I'm crawling on my hands and knees, and it felt like a block. I mean, I don't know how long it was, but it was far. And I'm crawling on my hands and knees trying to hold myself together. I finally get out onto the jungle floor, and it just starts. I mean, not only do I get sick, but I am like heaving, and it's loud, and it's, I mean, it's, and it felt so damn good. I can't even tell you. And you know, the shaman tell you that if you really, really get this big release, that a serpent will come out of you. Well, I swear to you, this black projectile came out of me, and it was a snake, and it went onto the jungle floor, and it slithered away, and I was like, oh my God. I mean, it was so black and so solid and so alive. And when I got done, I'm all humble, and I'm kneeling on the jungle floor, and I look up, I can see the stars, and I just felt so good. I'm like, you know, this was the coolest thing, just getting over myself and letting it go. And I needed to. I really did.
My job fell apart, my income fell apart, my sense of self fell apart when, as I mentioned earlier, I was the subject of fantastic, unprecedented, I have to say, and I'm not exaggerating, ridicule in this country of one person in the early 90s. And everything that was my sense of me, that was my sense of the security of this is what I am, and this is my security, financial, in terms of employment, in terms of the way the public perceived me, not with respect as they did before, but as a madman, all that fell apart. All that structure of what I thought I was collapsed. And only when it collapsed could the other level of me come forward and start to take me in a different direction. Because if you really want to go for it, then it will happen. But then comes the challenge. When things get difficult, don't walk away. Keep with it. Because what's happening, although it's not very pleasant, is that the you that has held you in, or the perception of you which has held you in the prison cell, in servitude, is breaking down. Let it go. Let it break down. Because when it's gone, something is going to emerge through the wreckage that you're going to like.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Hello, everybody. This is Damian Brinkley. Welcome to the hearts and minds of Informant. This is News for the Soul.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience a process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can. Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. Regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satya and Rasha of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing 5-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right. The tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyan says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to IlluminationIntensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's IlluminationIntensive.com.
In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. That's InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. Joe Dunning is a most unusual spiritual teacher and healer. After working with Joe, many people experience profound physical healing or find that they're finally free from the pain from past traumas and abuse. And now you can have a direct experience with Joe Dunning yourself for free. On the last Tuesday of every month, News for the Soul listeners can take part in Joe Dunning's free monthly teleconference event. Go to joedunning.com now to find out more. That's joedunning.com.
It's not just a show. It's a movement. You're listening to News for the Soul, the number one life-changing radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL, and the largest free life-changing audio resource on the web. We feature the top luminaries in the evolution of human consciousness and have kept all of our shows all free, all of the time, for the world to hear. In a recent listener survey, News for the Soul listeners responded with overwhelming appreciation and praise, which they summarized with this one powerful statement. News for the Soul is not just a show, it's a movement. Go to newsforthesoul.com to see for yourself. That's newsforthesoul.com.
This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.